She is so guilty. From the outside, other people's lives can look perfect, but have something to hide. Don't miss your true life's calling to be a detective. In this real-life investigation on assassins, imposters, families who kill their own, and survivors.
So guilty.
This episode includes descriptions of emotional abuse, child sexual abuse, sexual and physical violence, sibling abuse, and murder. Larry's the son of a famous forensic psychiatrist who led a double life, notable for his roles on the John Gotti and O.J. Simpson defense teams, doctor to a royal princess. Welcome to this episode. Now let's get into it. Here's Larry.
I didn't do it.
Tell me what you were doing before I ended up in the detention room in China. Gosh. Okay. Before I was looking for a job. I was always looking for a job. I was an English teacher, and not just that, but not just tutoring and teaching, but also I guess I have landed some positions like writing. And I did some audio voice work. I even did an acting job once. And I know that the reason I should explain the reason I got into trouble was because I had an expired, I didn't have a working visa or something. I knew that when I went to this particular interview coming up, they wanted to see a copy of my visa. So what happened was my passport was already falling apart. Strings coming out a little bit. And I didn't know it was illegal. I really didn't. I just tore out my visa. So I said, hey, well, as long as they don't see it, that's fine. I'm there legally. Apparently, later on we'll find out that that's mutilating a passport, can be punishable up to a year in prison. I flushed it down the toilet. I wasn't up to any good. I really didn't know, but that's what happened. And I've admitted to that in the detention room and further on. So what was I doing before I ended up in the detention room? Listen, the Olympics were coming. I was driving in a taxi that night. And the whole highway, which in Shenzhen, which by the way, one of the phone calls to my mom's house came from Shenzhen. I don't know anybody in Shenzhen. So we're going down this highway right before I got arrested. And Shenzhen is very long. So we have something called, I think it was like near Longhua. And then we have another part, which is downtown Shenzhen. And it's like a 30 to 40 minute taxi ride, car ride. So I was staying, I believe, on one end of the highway. And we're driving and it's dark, it's nighttime. And I said, oh, you know, that's strange. I guess, you know, when you're driving down this long highway, this long stretch, you can't see where you're going. And I was telling the taxi, are you sure you know where you're going, you know? Because, you know, we were driving already for like 20 minutes or so. I guess we had an argument, if that's what you want to call it. And for whatever, he stopped the car. We stopped the car and we talked on the highway. And then there's this policeman coming by. Now, it was the next day or two, the next few days later. That's the same highway, I believe, where the Olympic torch was going to be carried. And that made it a little bit more important for a policeman to stop us, I think. Maybe not, but it was an important highway, and it's significant because you know, when I'm being called into question, well, why are you missing a page in your passport that had your visa? And so I got detained. And that's it's not a criminal matter. It's just what it is. It's detainment for missing visa page in my passport. And so that's what happened. Okay. Could you describe the detention room in China? Well, of course, I'm just going to say it the way it is. First of all, I have no complaints about China. And a detention room was great. I'm sure it's better than a lot of other, never been to any other detention rooms. Very nice place. Clean. I'm not too sure how my friend wants me to describe it. But there were around four beds, maybe five beds lined up in a room. Same colors as this room, you know, gray and white. And describe the detention room in China. Well, it was run by one Chinese leader. We had about five cells, four or five in a room. And the man who led the place was around the corner, just nearby. It's like the same block, if that's what you want, or the block, or a hallway, half, you know. And from the way this guy Benny introduced me to him, because Benny was pointed out by him, by the leader, to be my translator. Benny told me that the leader had, sounded like Benny was describing that the leader had once been a Chinese, like Navy SEAL. I don't think I'd have to not reveal, but yeah, I mean, he owned a tampon factory in Shenzhen, and I think these things are important to note. For anybody to verify where it was or find out who Benny and Sasha were. Because, you know, even though there's no doubt that my father and my family pulled these strings to orchestrate this crime, because you're dealing with this massive organization like State Department, FBI, CIA, there's no telling how it might have gotten mixed up with each other. That's why there should be an investigation, because over this past decade of what I've described happened, it's possible there could have been more than one culprit. Describing the detention room in China? Well, that's what I described. The meals were vegetable meals and gave my stomach a little bit of gas. And I don't remember getting milk. I just remember the vegetables giving me gas. And so I know Sasha took it as an insult. So when I first came into the detention center, my very first time, as soon as I got to the door of the detention center, of the cell room, the detention room, I was met by Benny. And Benny was pulled me aside as soon as I walked in the door. I'll go on with this, even though it's not described in the detention room, it's a little bit upon my, it's important to note. But Benny introduced himself and says, hey, I don't want to, it's a little bit stressful for me to go back I just want to tell you what he says. And he says that many people had been killed. But he described it, I remember, there were dead bodies everywhere. And he said he was, did VIP security, and that he was working with diplomatic security services, And he told me it was confidential. And so anyways, and that was just when I first got there. So leaving it at that, could you tell me how your Aunt Ruth Pearl is involved?
Okay.
So my friend says, could you tell me how your Aunt Ruth Pearl is involved? I don't know what she means involved, because I don't know. But what I do know is that in this whole description of what has happened over this decade, it's important to note that my Aunt Ruth was the only person who was able to confront my mother about me being followed by their friend Paul, who was a detective in Boston. This was right after high school. And it's important because my mother always lied. It's like she's never accountable. She was willing to have me look like I was paranoid. I mean, this guy Paul even admitted it, and he even parked his car outside my house. I mean, so my mother was lying, saying, no, it wasn't, you know, and I mean, to make me look paranoid by my own mother on purpose was just to protect herself. It's just horrible. So my Aunt Ruth at one point confronted my mother, found out my mother admitted it to her. But she would never admit it to me, neither would my father. So my neighbors, not my neighbors, my tenants contacted me when I was in China on my trip to go open the company. And I got these urgent messages saying, Larry, there's a strange woman taking photos and she's in the garden. She's taking photos of the house. I said, really? Is she on the property? And I said, yeah, she's on the property. And they were encouraging me to look into this. So I did. And I found out it was my aunt. She hadn't told me, which was odd. I mean, just say, hey, Larry, I'm going to go to your house, take some pictures or something, or just letting you know. But she never did. That's strange. Especially during the situation with the other people. And so that's all I know about Ruth Pearl. And by the way, she changed her name because she married my Uncle Jeff and apparently didn't like him. I think it's important to realize that my mother and her sister have some screwed up things going on in their lives. Okay. Number 6 or 5. Well, share the details of your meeting with Benny in Taiwan on your birthday. It's funny because I never talked about these things in my book, and all I can tell you is that, okay, let me start. It was my birthday. I called up Benny. I was like, hey, it's my birthday. Let's go meet. He had to wait. He was busy doing something. We finally settled. There was a Jamaican bar in Taiwan, Taipei. So I says, let's meet there. It took a while. A couple hours later, I had to wait for him, but he came. And I, you know, wearing a red sweatshirt, pretty strong guy, seemed he'd been working out, or a little bit more so strong than he was in the detention center, of course. But anyways, there was this guy with him, because Benny would say, hey, it's my birthday, or maybe I even said it, but it was my birthday, and a guy comes up, and this guy, for my judgment. I don't know what kind of guy this was, but he seemed a little diplomatic. I get the sense of who's a little diplomatic. I think we ordered tequila, or we had a shot of something. I don't know what it was, but something about Benny there and us drinking and this other guy and some other guys in the background, I didn't feel comfortable and I left. And that's how I ended that meeting on my birthday. I was probably there for about an hour. And it's funny, something that always bothered me, because this was pivotal point. This was right, I don't know if this was right after or before the attack in Hong Kong.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you felt your crime detective calling and could appreciate our provocative subject matter. Please take a moment and subscribe, comment, or like us on your YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, or your favorite social media. We hope you listen to our next episode. And remember, life is not always perfect, especially for the victim.